Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Football Diary podcast. Arsenal finally beat Man City and moved joint top of the Premier League with Spurs as we head into the international break. But how significant might this result be? And who, realistically, would you say is a title contender? Everton finally opened the floodgates with an emphatic 3-0 home win. Yep, home win over Bournemouth. And European heroes West Ham and Newcastle battled out an entertaining 2-2 draw in the pick of this week's action. But obviously, the only place to start really is Arsenal 1, Man City 0, Dave. It's the big flagship game of the week and probably the one we've been waiting for to sort of test title credentials. So in a nutshell, what would you say we learned about Arsenal, Dave, in this 1-0 win? Because from my point of view, it was quite a tetchy game. It was like one of those old school title contenders where both teams don't really want to lose. So they're kind of playing with a bit of caution. And really, it was a bit of a stroke of luck that won the game for Arsenal, wasn't it? But what did you make of it, mate?
Yeah, it was an interesting game. I think particularly the first half, I don't think there was a great deal in it. It was quite a feisty game at times. You know, plenty of challenges going in. A bit of controversy as well, again. It's not very often we don't say that, though, after every game we speak about nowadays. But
yeah.
I was really impressed with how Arsenal actually managed this game. I thought particularly the centre-back pairing handled everything, really, that were thrown up. And I think it says a lot, really, that they only actually conceded 4 shots, one of them only on target. Man City really did struggle to kind of wriggle their way through the team. And, you know, we've seen so many times how they can take teams apart with their movement and, you know, their passing in those areas. And Arsenal just didn't allow them to do that. And I think a lot of that came down to particularly the midfield and I think the structure of the midfield, but the defence as well. I thought Man City did look a little bit all at sea in midfield. And I think that's been evident, especially in the last 2 or 3 games. They really missed Rodri in there. And Arsenal, really, it was 50-50 in possession, which is not very often you can say that about, you know, a game that Man City are involved in. And Arsenal created far more. You know, obviously, they had 12 efforts on goal. And I thought Gabriel Jesus, I think he made a real handful of himself. I thought he made it uncomfortable for that City defence. And you saw at times they just couldn't deal with him. And I think he'll be really happy actually after Gabriel Jesus going back to his former team and kind of making his mark, because I think going to Arsenal, I don't think anyone would have imagined they'd be where they are now and that for them to be challenging as quickly as they are. And I think that says a lot about what Arteta's doing there and how formidable they've become in such a short space of time. And it's actually kind of made it really interesting at the minute. I know, obviously, Man City have got a lot of injuries. I think there's quite a bit of work that needs to be done there to kind of pull themselves together. Obviously, Haaland was completely anonymous in this game. So I think they need to find a way to how they can actually go back to basics and start actually putting performances together, because they've not looked like the same team as they have done at the start of the season.
Yeah, amazing miss, isn't it, for the team not having Rodri there? And that's probably the most evident it's been now after this run of defeats. It's weird to say that Man City has suffered a run of defeats, isn't it? But I think it was a game that, I know I said it was lucky because of the way the goal deflected in for Martinelli's shot. But Miles, I think when you look on the balance of play, Arsenal definitely had the most intent, I think. They were definitely the ones trying to score, I think it felt like. And like Dave was saying, Haaland was comprehensively starved of service by a combination of factors, really. And you could also argue that Mateo Kovacic could have and should have been sent off too for 2 yellow cards. And after the VAR kind of conversation we were having last week around the Liverpool-Spurs game, I'm kind of surprised that they haven't took a more serious stance on that. So Man City, looking not to lose by more maybe? Or do you think this was a fair result on balance of play?
I think it was probably a fair result. I think I'd question how much intent Arsenal had considering the game, really. I think I've seen a lot of people talk about this game as like a chess match. And I think that analogy only goes as far as it was really boring and people pretend that it was good and they understand it to sound intellectual. It was a terrible game of football, if we're totally honest, because neither team wanted to lose it. And I don't really feel like either team really went for it to the capacity that they're capable of. Now, I understand that from a Man City point of view, because we talk about the significance of Rodri missing. That is absolutely true. But it's also notable that people kind of assume that Kevin De Bruyne's absence would be well covered by someone like Phil Foden or Bernardo Silva. But we are forgetting that Kevin De Bruyne is the best in the world in his position. And when you lose a player of that quality, it's no surprise that Haaland was a bit quieter when there's such a lack of service. Now, that to a degree does a disservice to the performances of Declan Rice and Saliba, who I think were both outstanding and they were the best players on the pitch. But what does that say to you about the game if the best players on the pitch were Arsenal's two controlling defensive players? I thought this game was a little bit underwhelming, but Arsenal won't care. That 3 points is all that matters. I think you can only go so far as to saying how much this means for Arsenal, because although it's an excellent result in terms of you always want to win, if they had got anything other than a win, it would have been a terrible result, because you have to win this game. If you're ever going to beat Man City, you're at home. They've got really key figures missing from their team. Okay, so do Arsenal. There's no Saka. Martinelli comes off the bench. Fair enough. But I think it's really overstated how much depth Man City actually have. Because we talked for ages about how Man City would win the league and the second best team in the league would be Man City's B team. But actually, we're seeing now, with them missing their core midfield, who have they really got to come in? And what does it say about someone like Calvin Phillips and his career at Man City if Rodri is missing and they'd rather play Bernardo Silva as a holding midfielder? Like, Kovacic really struggled to get to the pace of the game. And that was why he made a couple of reckless challenges in the first half that should have seen him sent off. Yeah. And Arsenal should be winning this game. They've just spent over 100 million on a centre midfielder that Man City were openly after. So once you've done that kind of business, once you've excelled to that point and you're at home and you're playing a weakened Man City team, yes, it's a good result to beat them. But if they hadn't beaten them, what would it have said? So yeah, it's the right result. But it's not one that I'm going to go, well, it makes me think Arsenal are the best team in the league all of a sudden, I'll be honest.
Well, that's kind of my next question really for you, Dave, is to say that the squads have changed a little bit since the summer. Obviously, City have kind of lost a key player like Gundogan. Arsenal have improved with a player like Declan Rice. But I think the biggest difference between the two teams last season was the quality of the first 11. Like you say, De Bruyne is the best in the world in his position. Arsenal didn't really have a player like that. Have they finally got a player in Declan Rice who is one of the best in the world, is in his position now? And, you know, has that suddenly elevated them to the same level as Manchester City? Because 90% pass accuracy for the game, no fouls committed against Man City. That's ridiculous. And for a team that prides itself on tactical fouls, you know, Man City, they didn't concede any to Declan Rice. He won possession 4 times during the game and did a goal line clearance in the middle of all that as well. So in terms of performances, he's showing his worth to Arsenal already in a game like this, isn't he?
Doing what he does, there aren't many better in his position and how well he does it in games. I think there's a lack of that sort of player around. I think there's some very good young talents who are, you know, making their way from the game. Obviously, Moises Caicedo being one of them, obviously, at Chelsea. But I think there are a lack of them who do it so effectively week in, week out, and you very rarely get a bad game from Declan Rice. And I think that says a lot about the player himself. I think in terms of, you mentioned players that are missing, Miles, I think you mentioned Rodri there. The main thing that stands out for me in Man City is that they don't really have a replacement for him. They don't really have a player who can step in.
Well, obviously, they do, but they don't use him.
Obviously, they've got Kovacic. And you mentioned, what player on about?
Well, Phillips is like for like almost, isn't he? He should be.
He's not like for like in terms of standard and skill, but that is his role.
No, yeah, he's not. He's nowhere near the level, then. It's quite obvious.
So why have they got him if they're not going to play him when Rodri's not available?
And it's, do you know what's quite damning, actually? Because Pep came out and said, didn't he, you know, Bielsa used him in a way that leads, you know, a completely different style to which Man City play, which is strange in itself, because you're kind of saying, well, he's not used to playing this way that we play. He's not really fit for purpose as such, I suppose. And if you're not playing him in this game, when they're dying out, you know, they're crying out for a midfielder who offers some sort of stability and balance, and you're starting, you know, Bernardo Silva over him. He's never gonna make his mark. And do you know what? I was actually quite surprised he started Bernardo Silva. I actually thought he might put John Stones in there, who we've seen step into
midfield. Not fully fit though, was it?
No, but it is a strange lineup for me. It was always going to be a risk, and like you mentioned, it was kind of set up for Arsenal perfectly, really. I'm sure when that team sheet came out, they would have been licking their lips and thinking there's not a better opportunity for them to win.
Well, yeah, it's the first league win of the City since 2015, isn't it? So
yeah, crazy.
It's been long overdue.
12 losses in a row. Wow. It's crazy. But to be fair, for a bit of balance, this is an Arsenal team who managed to, like you say, control a lot of the game without Thomas Partey in the side. Like, Jorginho came in, and I think he played really, really well. Yeah. Like, he got booked early on, and you thought, oh dear, this has got Jorginho red card, Kovacic winner written all over it. And actually, I think he was just... He showed the kind of player that we saw at Napoli, where he was just happy to kind of dictate play a little bit, receive the ball in tight spaces and kind of give it to the right man. And I think it helped Declan Rice with his game a lot, having someone with that kind of maturity next to him. So that was a real positive for Arsenal. And they did complete this win without Saka, which is huge for them because, well, the last time Saka didn't play a Premier League game, I think he was just learning to walk. That's what it feels like. Mm-hmm. So... yeah, it is a good win for them, and they'll be happy to have kept the pace with Spurs, because the last thing that they would want going into an international break is looking at Spurs on top and having come off the back of a loss to Man City. That kills so much of the good feeling around the club. Mm. And it could have been so different with the way that they were playing in the first half, particularly David Raya, who looked scared.
Nervous, yeah, really nervous. But again, it's that conversation of he's got a very capable... Is he an understudy, another goalkeeper on the bench that's of equal quality almost to him watching on? The pressure is on in a game like this, isn't it? And when you're playing the ball out from the back and playing it between the defenders and the goalkeeper against a team like City, the play like Alvarez pressing him, it always looked like that was going to happen. And he got away with it so much, didn't he? That
in could the first have gone half, so he did. In the second half, he was doing it really well. And actually, some of the balls he was playing were integral to Arsenal moving up the pitch. But... that's why I think this game, you go, yeah, well done, you got the win, but we move on from it and we don't make a big deal of it. Because actually, if Nathan Ake had taken that chance in the first half, which he really, really should have, if that block that Alvarez gets in on Raya goes an inch further to the left, basically, and if that deflection doesn't happen, we're talking about a very, very different game. And actually, nothing really needed to happen in terms of the playing of that match for that to be the case, if that makes sense. Like, it didn't need Man City doing anything miraculous. This was, it feels harsh saying a fortuitous win. But
it was, though.
I think so.
It's the kind of win Arsenal haven't managed to grind out in the past. And last season was an example of that. And City were always the kind of team that managed to win 1-0 despite playing awfully. And, you know, they say that's the hallmark of champions. And I know it's early days, but I think that's already a sign that Arsenal are actually putting themselves in a position to take advantage of mistakes or luck or whatever you might call it. So it feels like progress for me from an Arsenal point of view.
I definitely think teams are sensing more of an opportunity at the minute when they play Manchester City. And I feel as though you mentioned Kevin De Bruyne and you mentioned Phil Foden. They're both very creative players in their own way, but very different. You know, De Bruyne, what Haaland is missing at the minute is definitely that delivery, you know, that pass from De Bruyne. It's so evident. And, you know, they've got so many players that are quite, I wouldn't say similar to Phil Foden, but they like to pick up those little, you know, pick up those spaces and in between the channels. They're just missing that extra dimension that De Bruyne gives them. And I feel as though they are not as creative as what they usually are and creating as big opportunities as they normally do.
So going into the international break now with Tottenham on top on goal scored, I think it is, versus Arsenal, but otherwise an identical record points and goal difference. What does this look like from a title challenge point of view? And it's very early days, isn't it? But you can kind of get a lay of the land, Miles, can't you, about which teams look capable, I guess, at least. Do you put Spurs up in that bracket now? Or are they still in a new manager bounce honeymoon period? Are Liverpool in that conversation? Are there any teams below them that you could see breaking into that conversation too? So you up nicely, there you go.
That was an audio feature, by the way. Sorry if you're listening to us on Spotify or Apple somewhere. Me raising my eyebrows at the prospect of Villa having a title challenge. Arsenal are definitely title challengers. I think we knew that at the start of the season. Yeah. This result doesn't make me think that City aren't favourites still, because I think once they get Rodri back from the suspension, changes a lot of the makeup of that team. And obviously De Bruyne will come back at some point as well. Do I think Spurs are in that conversation yet? It seemed harsh because they're top of the league, but no, I still expect them to Spurs it up somehow. I don't think they're in a new manager bounce. I genuinely think they're a better side. I think it's past the point of it being momentum from just Ange coming in. They look far better. I think we'll talk about Spurs a bit more with the game later, I'm sure. If you think about the players that they brought in over the summer, they've made a real impact already, particularly James Maddison and Van der Ven. But I still can't see them having enough through the course of a season to keep this form up, because we've seen Spurs make not this good a start. It is their best ever start, but similar enough even last season. Liverpool, to me, are more threatening than Spurs, despite being in fourth, which is a weird thing to say, but it feels like they will be able to click and keep that consistent for longer than Spurs, perhaps.
Well, the game that Tottenham beat Luton against 1-0, it was the kind of game that I think many had talked about as being the kind of game that classic Spurs would mess up just before the international break and not take that opportunity to go into the international break on top of the table. But they'd taken it, and it was a tough game for them to win, really, wasn't it, against everything that was thrown at them by Luton and the way, you know, they've set up. So some, I think, signs that Tottenham are different as well. Arsenal as well, with this kind of victory, signs that they're different too. So it doesn't feel like the Premier League top of the table is as much of a runaway thing as we thought it might have been. Fair to say?
I will say, Spurs tried their best to throw this game away. Of course they did. If we're totally honest. Like, Basuma's red card was an absolute joke.
Luton had a lot of opportunities.
And yeah, that's the other thing I was going to say, is the only reason Spurs won this game realistically is because Luton were terrible in front of goal. Any other team other than maybe Sheffield, in the Premier League scored twice at least in that game from the chances that Luton were creating. They just lacked the clinical edge up front, and Spurs could have really been punished. Like, it wasn't a case of they defended well, it was finishing at the end was just awful. So they tried their best, Spurs.
That's the thing with Luton, isn't it? If Morris isn't scoring, then you know who's going to stand up?
Yeah, no one.
But I am pleased to see a yellow card, a second yellow given for something so trivial as well. It feels like if you're in that position where you're on a yellow card already, why would you do something so stupid? I'm glad it was punished, to be fair.
Yeah, I don't know why he did that, because he was already suspended for the next game because he'd already picked up five yellows anyway. And he was actually having a really good game, and he's had a really good start to the season. It was just such a stupid position to put your team in.
Like, do you know what?
I just looked lost.
I was delighted to see Diving finally punished because it's probably... Mm. The only thing that isn't acted upon, I'd say, a lot more than most, most things that happen in a game, and it's just so frustrating. I'm just glad he obviously,
in a week where we're talking about a lot of referees bottling giving a second yellow card, like Kovacic definitely should have had a second one. We'll talk about another one later. It was good to see the ref go, no, what you've just done there was absolutely ridiculous, because it looked ridiculous as well. He didn't even do a good dive.
Having said that, side note, I thought Alex Greenwood's yellow card that led to a dismissal for time wasting in the WSL was ridiculous. Yeah, really.
She took 3 seconds to take that free kick. It felt like she literally looked for another option and was like, okay, it's not there, I'll turn right. And then the ref was like, no, ridiculous.
Brutal. Yeah, anyway, that's a different conversation about the standard of refereeing in the WSL.
After Villa's result last week to United, I don't want to talk about that anyway.
Well, that was a comprehensive victory. What are you talking about, mate? Anyway, I wanted to move on to a team we haven't really, I'd just say, celebrated much or talked about in a positive light much at all, really, and that's Everton. They beat Bournemouth 3-0 in a really easy game for them, really. Bournemouth were horrendous trying to play it out the back. You can see what they're trying to do, but Everton finally broke their duck, really, against a really sloppy team. So they had 25 attempts at goal in this game. You'd expect them to have won with that much, but their XG is amongst the highest in the league. I think it's like fifth highest XG of 17.56. But they scored 9 goals. So the deficit between the expectation and reality is so far off that Sean Dyche is right. In every post-match, he's been saying, we should have scored more goals. We should have scored more goals. And they finally did. It took a really awful Bournemouth team to enable that. But they had to be clinical as well, didn't they, Miles? They had to actually put the ball in the back of the net. And a few of their goals, you know, James Garner's was fantastic. Jack Harrison's was fantastic.
What a finish. Mm,
they did what they needed to do, didn't they? And it was refreshing to see. I'm sure Everton fans at home as well are thrilled to trying to finally break a 4-game losing streak, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think to be able to get that result at home, they've had a couple of good performances recently and a couple of decent results as well. But getting that at Goodison Park is so crucial, because there's so much uncertainty around the club right now. And there's so much for fans to kind of be stressed about with this talk of a new ownership coming in and the kind of league position they were in. It felt like they deserved a good home result, and this is what they got. It feels like for the longest time we've been talking about Everton as a bit of a crisis club because of matters off the pitch. So it's nice to see them kind of get things right on the pitch for a change. And that coincides with Dominic Calvert-Lewin coming back into the team and looking in much better form. James Garner kind of, yeah, he should have, but he's playing very well again, which is a good sign. James Garner, like you mentioned, I think is living up to some of the potential that we knew of him when he was back at Man United as well. There was even talk of United trying to bring him back in the summer, wasn't there, to a degree, because I think they were looking for midfield options. And yeah, I think he took his goal well. It was fortunate that it came from a mistake from Bournemouth, but you have to take those. And Jack Harrison kind of showed why Everton were willing to take him on despite that injury, because this finish was, yeah, outstanding. And when you're a team down there and you're struggling for goals and you're struggling for points, you need those moments of magic to come off and you need the rub of the green sometimes. So yes, it was fortunate that the Bournemouth defender fell over, but you have to capitalize on that and take those chances when they come, because they'll be taken against you. You know that. They've seen that the hard way. So yeah, it could have been a lot more than three, to be honest. Bournemouth looked absolutely terrible, didn't they?
Yeah. Well, we could talk about Bournemouth, but we're going to stick on Everton at the minute, Dave, because I think Sean Dyche has been quite vocal in saying that it will come. You know, if they keep playing the way they're playing, it will come. And this is the game where it finally did. Do you think that Everton have been unlucky then? Has it been a confidence thing? Has it been just things like this game haven't come their way and these kind of breaks? What's been the thing that stopped them from scoring as many goals as they definitely should have scored?
It definitely feels like something's clicked. And I think the game where a lot of it came together was the one against Brentford, which, you know, it was comprehensive victory really in the end and quite an impressive one. And I think a lot of their players, particularly the attacking players, are actually making their mark now. And it's something that they really did struggle with. We mentioned they obviously struggled to score goals. I think Abdoulaye Doucouré has been an absolute sensation this year. Definitely, I'd say he's been their player of the year. I think he's got something like the fourth best XG to goals in the league, which is just ridiculous. But he's affecting games week after week. He's definitely added something different to their attack. He's playing a little bit more advanced, I feel, than he was last season. And you mentioned the likes of, you know, James Garner took his goal really well in this game. He actually played it quite cleverly. If you have a look when he cuts inside, it looks as if to play the player on to the left of him, but then takes upon himself, so it gives him a little bit of extra space. Mm. It was actually quite interesting to hear his reaction after the game as well, and he was saying, "I'm still not sure whether I actually made the right decision," because it kind of went in a little bit strange. But you know what, James Garner, he should be scoring more goals. I saw a lot of him, you know, United's youth team, and he's actually a really good finisher. I don't feel as though he gets in the positions enough to show it. He's got so much potential. So, you know, Everton, they've definitely turned the tide. There's no doubt about it, because there's been consistency there, even against Luton last week. They had opportunities, a few opportunities early on where they could have gone ahead, and they should have really. But it's about maintaining that consistency, particularly in attacking areas, because defensively they look so much better. I think with Brathwaite in there, who looked like real talent as well coming in, and obviously has pushed Michael Keane out of the team. I feel as though there's a lot of potential in there, and it's fascinating times really. It didn't look good at times, obviously last season, but all of a sudden it's starting to come to fruition, and you know that's brilliant for Everton fans.
It's always going to take time, isn't it, with that squad, because it's been assembled by countless managers.
Oh yeah,
and now Dyche has been there what, 10 months maybe. Under a year, isn't it, that Dyche has been there?
Yeah.
But at least has had a bit more time with that squad to get it working in the way that he would like it. And although he didn't recruit all of those players, he obviously has the familiarity with players like McNeil, who is really vital to their attacking outlet. He managed to bring in a few players of his own over the summer. So that will be huge. But it's difficult for them because it feels like things could change like that any second with this takeover looming. And I think Everton fans would be cautious about saying that they've turned the tide just yet, because the last three games have been Brentford, who are a bit out of sorts, Bournemouth, again, not really performing to the level we'd have expected them. And Luton, and they lost the Luton game. So it's a good step in terms of the way they're playing. I'm talking about league games. Listen, if you want to talk about the Villa of the league game, no, you are right. That, again, we've seen some better performances from them.
Yeah.
But until that's concrete up the table, I think it will be a nervous time for them. But it's nice to see that at least there is a bit of a coherent strategy on the field again, because you talked about what they were doing right attacking wise in this game. But actually, one of the biggest shifts for me is they just seem to control a game and not defend too recklessly. Because it felt like for a while, they've got a defensive line who, let's be honest, it's not the quickest, but it's very well suited to a kind of low block, kind of suited to winning aerial duels and being organized. And they weren't doing that at the start of the season, and it feels like that's starting to click now. And that always takes time, of course it does, but we need to see that after the international break against teams that are in the ascendancy, because they got Liverpool first game back.
I know,
huge,
interesting one. I think there's definitely been a switch in the intensity. You only have to watch Everton now to see, you know, how quickly they're coming out the blocks, they're pressing a lot higher, you know, it's a real breath of fresh air to see, I think. And here's an interesting stat for you. Abdoulaye Doucouré, whenever he's scored for Everton, he's never lost a game.
He's an influential player, isn't he?
Yeah, do you remember when he was first coming through at Watford and there was talk of him going to like PSG or Arsenal? Like, really highly rated. And it kind of felt like he fell out of favour for a while at Everton. Yeah. And he came back in towards the end of last season, basically saved them. And it's nice to see him kind of continue that momentum. But it's difficult in this league at the moment, because you look at the newly promoted teams, you think they're going to really struggle. Bournemouth and Brentford, as I mentioned, already look quite weak. So Everton have got an opportunity to at least avoid that kind of fight again this year if they can pick up some form. But then you look at straight after the international break, they've got Liverpool, West Ham, they're back in the cup again, which they should win really, because they've got Burnley in there. So it'd be nice to see them continue that run. Brighton, Crystal Palace, United. How many points do Everton get from those five games?
Well, I think a lot of it.
Because they've got to keep this momentum going.
Well, a lot of it hinges for me on whether they can actually get goals from the forward line. Because they've got, I mean, the three goals in this game were from midfielders, right? So do they still, the question's obvious, isn't it? They need a striker, I think, in January, because the burden on the midfielders to score and on Calvert-Lewin to stay fit is still too high for me. They need to finish chances off with an actual recognised striker. How many teams are saying that this
season?
They're
hoping Beto will do that.
Well, he's been wasteful. Neil Mopé's been wasteful. Dan Juma's been wasteful. Like, the XG is so high and their actual goals so low is because the quality's just not that good.
Getting Mopé off the books for this season at least was the best thing that I think they've done in the last 12 months.
What's the problem? If midfielders can keep scoring consistently and everyone's contributing, I can't see there's a problem.
Worked for Arsenal last year. They didn't really have a goal scorer in number nine as much. Jesus got a few, but came from elsewhere.
Calvert-Lewin will, as soon as he puts slots a couple, I think they'll be fine. I think he needs to put a run together and, you know, we'll see what happens.
It feels hard to do that, get that run together though straight after that international break. It's kind of come at the worst time for them a little bit, because they've started to play some good games. Now, all right, I imagine they're going to have a lot of the squad together for the break. I don't imagine a lot of them will go. And that might help Dice get that organisation and have a bit of a mini pre-season again. But next three games, Liverpool, West Ham, Brighton, are you realistically scoring a lot of goals in those games? I mean, if they come back and beat Liverpool, huge. That's their season. Like, that takes off from there, doesn't it? But if they come back and get humbled by Liverpool, it could reverse all the good that's been done. I feel like they're in a difficult situation.
Yeah, I think you're right. The international break probably is not the greatest timing for them, and it's a break they can kind of do without really for the momentum. But moving on to two teams that are probably grateful for a bit of a break, and that's European adventurers, West Ham and Newcastle. So a 2-2 game that was really entertaining, but I think you could tell Newcastle were drained, couldn't you, from their exploits against Paris Saint-Germain, which we haven't even talked about really, but that was an outstanding performance from them in Europe, wasn't it? But this game, Eddie Howe has admitted that there was a definite kind of physical hangover from that. So how much can we read into a result like this, Miles? Can we put it down to two teams literally that are quite good at scoring goals and quite attacking teams? Or is it just two quite tired teams who have been on a very busy, if successful, week in Europe?
I think you can read quite a lot into that with that still being the case, to be honest. Because when we were looking at our season predictions, one of the first things I said to you was, I wonder how Newcastle balance European football and the Premier League, and I see them dropping out of the top four this year because of that factor. And this is a perfect example of that, because although they then went on and got some good results at the start of the league, as soon as the Champions League got tough for them, we saw their lack of depth. They made one change for this game from the PSG game, and they just looked emotionally drained. Yeah. And you still have the quality of someone like Alexander Isak and Kieran Trippier to kind of carry you through a game to a degree. But realistically, if Newcastle are trying to get back into the top four this year or higher, then they should win this game. But West Ham, let's give them some credit. They've been fantastic so far. Yeah. And it quietly have gone about assembling a really, really good squad. Like you look at that West Ham team, how many of them would get into the Newcastle team? More than I think people would kind of think off the top of their head without looking at it. All of a sudden, like, there's some real quality in that team. Like,
yeah.
Paqueta's obviously really well blooded in now. Ward-Prowse has been excellent. They've seen Jarrod Bowen get back into the England setup. He's been fantastic recently. And then they've still got players that they're yet to integrate. I'm sure we'll talk about one of them in a moment because he managed to get himself on the score sheet. But these are two really good teams right now who are on the ascendancy, and Newcastle can be forgiven for not quite putting 100% out in this game, because, look, I don't want to be a product of the sports washing and get involved with Newcastle too much, but I felt like a Newcastle fan watching that game. It was so good to watch. It was thrilling. It was such a good performance. And if we take the ownership aside for a second, because, and I suppose that's difficult to do because that is exactly what they want to do, but acknowledge it for what it is, seeing local Newcastle lads and fans score goals against PSG and seeing Mbappe sulk. If you can root for Newcastle against anyone, PSG is definitely the team you want to see them batter. So that was nice to watch, I'll be honest. And you actually do applaud Eddie Howe and the boys for like how they've grown, but it just felt like the Premier League came too soon for them this weekend.
Yeah. Well, I think both teams have come of age in Europe, haven't they, lately? Mm. Newcastle's first two games have been impressive in the Champions League. West Ham are on a mad unbeaten run now, aren't they, in Europe, which is
the longest of any English team.
It's ridiculous how confident they are in Europe. And I think that carried on into this game, although they were probably a little bit tired. That first sucker punch of a goal from them was so well crafted. Like Paqueta's pass from deep into Emerson, I think it was, who then set up Suchek beautifully.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Such great technical ability from a West Ham team who you don't normally associate that kind of craft with. So for them to take the lead was deserved, and I think it shocked Newcastle a little bit until Isak scored his really quick brace, which then did the reverse on West Ham. So it was an entertaining game that ebbed and flowed a little bit, but the quality I thought was there. And then the icing on the cake was the winning goal late on from Mohamed Kudus, who had a fantastic game, didn't he?
Yeah, and it's funny because we're still yet to see him start a game for West Ham. I think he's played 72 minutes in the Premier League so far across 5 substitute appearances, and we know how talented he is as a player. And it's funny because it's an excellent sign-in, because we would talk about the problem with Newcastle being their lack of depth, and then we could also criticise West Ham for signing a player that they can't get into their starting 11. So it's a fine balance to have when you're in these European competitions, and actually having an option like him off the bench was probably what got them a point in this game. So that's really crucial, but you have to be wondering how he gets a place in that starting 11 now, because he's a phenomenal player, Kudus. We all know that. But when he's trying to occupy the same space as Jarrod Bowen, who's been in such good form as well, where do West Ham integrate him in a more permanent setting? It's a challenge that Moyes will have to balance, and not necessarily one he's always been successful with, if we're honest. Moyes has kind of struggled before at keeping a wider squad happy and bringing in talent who aren't really either academy products or kind of British staples. Kudus is someone that has shone in Europe before and could definitely help West Ham be successful across the season. But I hope that they manage to utilise his talents well, because he's such a good player to watch.
Yeah, it's another dimension to West Ham. And again, it's a sign of, I guess, the recruitment that they're going into now. West Ham, now they're growing in stature in Europe, especially, and hopefully in the league. And I thought the game was really entertaining for a neutral. I really enjoyed the goals. I thought they were all really well taken. But another flashpoint worth talking about, Dave, Bruno Guimarães as well. Similar situation to Kovacic. 2 yellow cards, potentially. Should he have gone?
It seems so, doesn't it? I mean, I can't really understand why he wasn't given a second yellow. Another strange decision, or a decision not made.
Really late tackle, but that second one, wasn't it?
Yeah, but nothing we're not used to, is it? You know, we're talking about this every single game. It seems like there's a contentious decision. And, you know, it, I mean, there was a bit of controversy around, I think it was the first Newcastle goal, there was a bit of a shove in the, or was it the second one, a bit of a shove in the back from Isak on Egerd. Yeah. I mean, I don't know whether it was just too soft. I feel as though he wasn't strong enough potentially there, or he just got his positioning, you know, not quite right. I think he probably got slightly wrong side again. But and I think the other goal, there was a foul that was an alleged foul. It looked quite soft on Tenard as well. For me, I think it's a good point for Newcastle. I think. Really going away to West Ham and how well they've done this season, I don't think they can, you know, really complain, especially obviously with all the you know, the effort and I think the emotional sort of exhaustion that they've, you know, suffered from that game in midweek and how much they put in. I mean, that atmosphere was enough to drain anyone, really. It's crazy. It was exhausting just to watch. But West Ham as a team, you mentioned, Mike, about Kudus. I think what obviously Moyes is looking to do is probably not cause too much disruption to, you know, his front line. I think defending from the front is something that he likes to do. And obviously his inclusion of, you know, Antonio, who really hustles and, you know, Harry's opposition. I think he's looking to see where he fits in. I think the problem is you know, you've got to give him an opportunity at some point because he's arguably the most talented player in that team alongside Paqueta, who's, you know, on another planet at times, the way he manoeuvres the ball and manipulates the ball.
Alvarez as well, worth mentioning. Oh, yeah. Brilliant. I think he's slid in so well. Ward-Prowse already, we've already talked about that with West Ham, but that midfield, regenerating that midfield after Declan Rice has gone, like, completely as well. Yeah. Like, I've three brand new players.
Well balanced as well.
Fantastic. Yeah, really well. And Suchek kind of adds to that as well. Mm. And it looked like he was kind of on his way out in the summer for a while, didn't it?
I've seen a lot of West Ham fans saying that, you know, Alvarez has actually made the Declan Rice departure and almost, it's kind of been brushed under the carpet a little bit. He's, you know, he's started really well in this game. He's probably arguably their man of the match.
Absolutely it has, because if you think about it, if West Ham had lost their first five or six games, all we would be talking about is, well, they're really missing Declan Rice. We've seen that with so many clubs who lose a big player. Definitely. And all you end up talking about is, well, this result would have been so different if they'd had. We haven't had that conversation. As much as we've praised Declan Rice at Arsenal, we've not really talked about him being at West Ham, have we? Because they haven't needed it.
Yeah, it's mad. That and Harry Kane leaving Tottenham have not had any effect on either team.
Who's currently sits third in the Bundesliga. How funny would it? It wouldn't be funny because I don't want Tottenham to win the league. But imagine if Spurs won the league and Bayern didn't this season. That would be hilarious.
It reminds me of Michael Owen leaving to go to Real Madrid and then Liverpool went and won the Champions League without him. That was hilarious as well.
Shocking.
Similar kind of energy, isn't it?
Another quick little stat before we move on. Mohamed Kudus, since he left Ajax, Ajax haven't won a game.
Oh, wow. Crazy.
Didn't know that.
They've been terrible, haven't they? Yeah. Brighton can have some hope then, can't they?
Going to move on now to try and squeeze in as many games as we can in the rest of the pod in a section I'm going to call In a Nutshell. So each of you are going to talk about your teams and their performances. Starting with you, Miles, can you try and describe Wolves 1, Villa 1 in a nutshell for us?
Yeah, so this is a game that often haunts Aston Villa. I think they lost five of the previous six at Molineux. So really important for them to get some sort of result. And they walked away with a point, which I think both teams would probably be happy with in the end. It was very much Pedro Neto and Hwang running things up front again, which we've seen Wolves do a few times this season. Yeah. So fair play to them and them being able to excel. Villa were unfortunate not to snatch it late. Ollie Watkins hit the post with the last touch of the game, and it was just gutting not to see that going from my point of view, playing against a 10-man Wolves side. And undoubtedly, he should have had a penalty. There was such a clear push in the back from Doherty. But yeah, a point is a point away from home, and I think we all kind of underestimated what Wolves were going to be able to do this season, so that isn't the worst result in the world. It feels frustrating when you watch Liverpool and Brighton drop points because they were playing each other, and actually, if we'd won this game, we'd have been level on points with City going into the international break, which would have just been incredible. But have to be happy with it as a performance, because we're coming off the back of a European performance that was very long as well. Thursday went on for a really long time. I was there, I can tell you. It was a long game. So a lot of Villa players would have been a bit exhausted from that as well. So yeah, a point to point.
Yeah, a slight missed opportunity there for Villa it feels, doesn't it? But Brighton and Liverpool, as you mentioned, drew 2-2, which again was another really entertaining game. There's a few of them in the league. I thought it was a fair result as well, a draw. I thought both teams did enough to get both goals, I think. And Lewis Dunk's equaliser was very much deserved, I think, for Brighton as well. Mm. They were pushing. It was Klopp's 8-year anniversary as well since becoming Liverpool manager. So that's weird. He's passed that 7-year mark, hasn't he? And he's actually leading Liverpool to some success, it feels like. They look like a good team. Salah still looks great. He got a brace. And Brighton showing off another gem in Simon Adingra, the Ivorian. Looked brilliant from Nordjylland, I think it is. So they're finding these players in the most obscure places. But he was fantastic as well. Another one who's probably on Chelsea's radar already. And Ryan Gravenberch as well, missing a chance to make it 3-1, hitting the post when it was like so easy to score. And I think there was a chance late on as well for Brighton as well, where they could have grabbed a winner. But yeah, an entertaining game. And I think a draw in the end was a fair result. I think both managers admitted that too. Dave, United winning against Brentford.
In a nutshell.
In a nutshell. Trying
a comprehensive, easy 2-1 win against Brentford.
Never is it?
Yeah. Oh, it's getting almost ridiculous now for United fans. But I think in this game, it almost summed up, I think, Brentford at the minute. Obviously, that absence of Tony is really kind of... It's very evident from game to game. I think with the loss of form, I think with Mbeumo, he's not really kind of impacting games as I feel as though they would like to. But they definitely obviously took advantage of United's, you know, slackness and indecisiveness in possession. Errors all over the pitch, which they capitalised. You know, there was 3 individual errors for the goal, midfield, defence and the goalkeeper. Is something that we've seen, you know, over the last few weeks and doesn't seem to be changing anytime soon. Mr. Thomas Franks certainly seemed to feel as though they were slightly, you know, a little bit unfair, a little bit unjust. And yeah, plenty of errors all over the pitch from United players. But a certain Mr. McTominay of enriched Scotland form came in and saved the day. In the last 5 minutes of the game.
Along with Harry Maguire.
And that, do you what?
That's with an assist.
They were probably the only two positives. McTominay, and I thought the centre-back pairing actually did really well in the game for the large part.
Brave decision, yeah. Anyway, we can't really talk too much about it. It's meant to be in a nutshell, Dave.
I could go on for another 20 minutes.
Yeah, we're not getting...
I watched the game and that would be more entertaining than the game was.
That is everything we've got time for this week, guys. Anything else to add? Any other business? Miles, or are you done?
It's very rare that I ever bother to talk about our cross city rivals, Mike, but I feel like it's worth giving a mention to Birmingham City, which I'm sure a lot of Villa fans that subscribe to the pub will be surprised to see me bring up. The fact that Birmingham are currently 6th in the Championship, beat West Brom 3-1 on Friday. Really good, really good result. And they followed that up with sacking their manager. Yep. One of their best starts to the Championship in a very long time. And they thought the best thing to do would be to bring Wayne Rooney in from DC. Now, I'll be honest, it would be very biased of me to sit and criticise Birmingham. But believe it or not, I do know some Birmingham fans. And with a peg on my nose and a safe distance, I've talked to them about it. And they are absolutely dumbfounded by it as well. Yeah. Because it's just a classic case of new owner wants a big name to get some publicity. Therefore, they will do whatever it takes. And have we not seen Birmingham do exactly this before? Yeah. Remember when Gary Rowett was doing very, very well?
Same energy.
And they were just like, nah, don't need to do this. And they've had spells with Zola in charge. I don't know. Maybe Rooney is the man to try and lead Birmingham back to the promised land, but it does not feel like it. And what a way to kill any good momentum Birmingham had. Yeah. I don't know if you boys, as United fans, maybe you've got a bit more faith in Rooney than I do at this point. But
I think I was going to say it's going to land a position based on absolutely nothing. And a Championship team, I think, is being devalued by having a manager that's got barely any experience. I mean, I'm discounting a lot of what he's doing at DC United because it's MLS, to be fair. But I think that
year at Derby, he did well. Let's be honest. He got relegated, but he did well.
In difficult circumstances. But I mean, a lot of managers who have got that reputation, Frank Lampard's included in that, Steven Gerrard, have been given opportunities well beyond any other player would have got just because of who they are. I think Rooney just needs to go and earn his stripes somewhere slightly lower down the football pyramid. And Birmingham, I don't know what they're doing. It's ridiculous, isn't it?
Well, if they were 18th in the table right now and brought Rooney in. I probably wouldn't criticise it, but why do it now? It's funny because Birmingham have wanted a new owner for so long, and understandably so, and now they're criticising the first decision the new owner's made because it feels like a ludicrous one. It's, I don't know, you have to laugh a little bit, let's be honest. I'll be honest, the Villa-Birmingham rivalry doesn't feel as big to Villa fans these days because they're kind of, and this isn't me throwing shade, they genuinely seem a bit irrelevant to us. We play Wolves far more often than we play Birmingham, and Birmingham have a closer eye on Villa than anyone does, trust me. But this is at least making me take notice because it's quite funny.
Do you know what? It's if you've seen the statement as well that they came out with, how much pressure is that put on Rooney? Basically said they want somebody who's going to come out and get the team on the front foot, playing with no fear. And it's almost like they're expecting, you know, instant promotion pretty much, because what better way can you start the season? Realistically, they lost some important players last year, obviously to Heat Chong, to Luton, who was, you know, one of a fan favourite. And I'm really dumbfounded. But I think as well, we talk about obviously Eustace, who he won't be short of suitors, that's for sure. No. And I think there was a few Premier League, apparently there's been a few Premier League clubs that have been looking at him. I mean, there's one particular club in the league that will, you know, snap him up, and that's Sheffield Wednesday, who, you know, United. To the bottom. Well, yeah, even
Sheffield United. They'll take him.
But I mean, you know, he might be a risk at Premier League level, but he's shown more than that, he's more than capable of navigating his way, you know, in the Championship, and that's probably their best start to a season in a long time.
I mean, playoffs would have been a real achievement for them if they'd have stayed in like sixth place, wouldn't it? So, yeah, interesting one. Birmingham fans, really keen to hear your take on that one too, if you're listening.
One for you guys to watch. Rooney's first game in charge against Michael Carrick's Middlesbrough. The United derby.
Narrative. Interesting. You see, the Championship is a great league, and I do think that they should really try and value it a bit higher, because I think other countries look at our second tier with quite a lot of respect. We get good crowds in the Championship, some really high quality teams. So sometimes the appointments that they make like that just devalue it very slightly. And that's no slight on
I think
Rooney.
It's only based on value, if we're honest.
Yeah, it's no slight on Rooney at all. He'll take the best opportunity that comes his way. But again, I'd like to see another more worthy manager be given a chance. The one they've let out the door, for example, is so sad, isn't it?
They didn't need to make a change. Like, Rooney is a good manager for Birmingham if they're looking at Birmingham last season. But right now, why would you do that off the back of beating West Brom 3-1?
Yeah, bizarre. Birmingham fans, listen. If you're listening, give us a comment. We'd love to hear what you think.
I don't know if they want to do that.
Of Wayne Rooney's appointment. No, but I'd love to get their take on it, to be fair.
Yeah, me too.
So, yeah, again, another call to action, really. Go over to our YouTube channel, give us a sub if you can. It'd be great to hear from you. Great to get that support for the channel that continues to grow, and hopefully will continue to do so. But that's it for this week's pod. Miles, as ever, pleasure to have you, mate. Dave.
Thanks, mum.
Great to see you. As always, Glazers out. See you soon.
See you again.